Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, a vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more bore for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely crew, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's March the 22nd, 2012. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, we're going to start out this week with a couple of emails. This one's from one of our comrades in the UK. Dear HAC, what is your opinion of the neo-Nazi shootings in France in which four kikes were killed? The media are blaming the French National Front. Could this be a black op, possibly to remove the French National Front from the political scene? The link is below. It'll make for a good segment on RFN, signed James in England. Okay, first off, I should mention that I'm making this on Wednesday, March 21st, day of the spring solstice, and as of this morning's news, it appears that the individual who was doing all the shooting over in France is not, in fact, a so-called neo-Nazi. It was a Muslim. There was some speculation from the very beginning as to exactly who was doing this. At one stage, there were reports that it was a supposedly white male that was riding around on a motorcycle. He shot three French paratroopers, and then a couple of days ago, he opened up on a quote-unquote Jewish school, whatever the nature of that institution might have been, and killed a rabbi, killed three Jew kids. That actually kind of inclined me to believe that it might be one of our guys from the French National Front or someone because of the incredibly poor target selection. This is almost up to Buford Furrow standards. Buford Furrow, for those of you who don't know, was a nut who went into a Jewish kindergarten in Los Angeles in 1999 and started blasting it away at a bunch of cute little kiddies in yarmulkes. Then he went out and shot a Filipino postman, and he took a taxi to Las Vegas to turn himself into the FBI. We've always been very, very bad at target selection. That is the worst possible propaganda that anybody could have for their cause, either us or the Muslims. Gunning down a bunch of cute little kiddies in yarmulkes, my God, what are these guys thinking? Or doing an Anders Breivik and shooting down a bunch of blonde girls. Never mind the fact that they were leftist Labour Party workers. A few Norwegians might get that, but the rest of the world won't. You know, this is just an aside here, but if you guys have to do this crap, for God's sake, don't do anything like that that's just going to look very, very bad in the media and give these people all the necessary excuse they need to defame us and smear us and distort our beliefs and so forth and so on. Anyway, I think I've gone into that before. Getting back to the incident in France. As I am speaking here, according to what I see on the web, the French police have got some Muslim guy surrounded in some little house, and it may even be over by now. But what this guy did, he first gunned down three paratroopers, French paratroopers, who were off duty. And this was not made clear at the beginning, but after the attack on the Jew school, it came out that all three of these French soldiers were non-whites of various kinds of, quote, North African origin. So that looked a little bit like it might be one of our guys. And then came the attack on the Jewish school where the guy, like I said, opened up on a bunch of cute little kiddies wearing yarmulkes, which is incredibly stupid. At least, unlike Furrow, this guy managed to kill an adult Jew, a rabbi. So that's, I suppose, one on the scoreboard for us, despite the bad publicity. So for a brief time, yes, it looked like it might be some kind of white French resistance. the French police arrested and interrogated three former French soldiers who were expelled from the army in 2008 for being quote-unquote neo-Nazis, however the French define that. But now it looks like it either is a Muslim in fact, or for whatever reason the French authorities have decided to change the story. So, who knows? But just as a quick word, guys, let me reiterate something that I've said before. Our race is not going to be saved from extinction by lunatics who hear voices in their heads. I do not advocate, incite, or urge you people in any way to go berserk with a gun in a shopping mall or whatever. That is not the way we're going to win. This cause is not about your personal injuries at the hands of American society or your personal vengeance against niggers or Jews or whoever it is who's done you wrong, and I'm sure, like most Americans, a lot of people have done you wrong. I know you're justified in feeling that way, but suicide is not really the best option to get your own back. What we need to be concentrating on doing, people, is changing the world. And that can only be done in an organized manner by a group of people acting in concert with a definable and achievable political goal, which we have in the Northwest Front, that goal being the establishment of a sovereign white nation here in the Pacific Northwest. I say again, there is no point, there is no political purpose, and there is no moral value in one individual simply going berserk with a gun. It just gives them more negative publicity with which to smear white nationalism. So guys, if what I say matters anything at all to you, don't do this shit. I mean it. No, it's not just Harold trying to cover his ass. Don't throw your life away. I don't want you or anybody else to die for the Northwest Republic. I want you to live for the Republic, and I want you to work for it. And that's a lot harder. Okay, next email is from a guy named Richard in, I don't know where he's from, he doesn't say. Dear HAC, I was wondering if you could give a reply on your show or by email in regards to some stupid nigger named Joseph Kony. I haven't really had time to look up all the info, and it's not what he's doing that gets me. The thing I'm most frustrated about is our people. Why is it that they all seem to think that they are political activists because they share a link on Facebook or something? These people don't know the first thing about politics in our country, let alone some third world African nation. This is annoying and gross. What is your take on the whole situation? Okay, what he's talking about is some guy about 6 weeks ago made a YouTube video of about half an hour on a nigger warlord in northern Uganda called Joseph Kony. And apparently this Joseph Kony is a real nutball even by African nigger warlord standards. He leads something called the Lord's Resistance Army. He is very big on child soldiers. He kidnaps boys and girls, ages, you know, about 10 to 12 or so, and turns them into soldiers for his so-called army. I suppose he takes them young because they're easy to brainwash at that age. And he now lords it over a good section of northern Uganda. He is a member of the Akoli tribe, or Acholi tribe, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. And so he has a tribal base, and he's fending off the weak forces of the central government in Entebbe. And he's still around. He's been around for quite a while, actually, I think about 20 years. And he's committing all the usual atrocities that Africans commit. I know we saw some of this in Rhodesia. The PF, the Patriotic Front, did horrible, horrible things to blacks that wouldn't go along with them, cutting off their lips and all this crap. Anyway, there's nothing special, as far as I can see, about this Joseph Kony guy. He is pretty much your typical black African warlord. No better, no worse than any of them. Of course, they're all pretty bad. But what appears to have happened is that this video has just completely gone viral for some reason. I don't know. I haven't seen it. Once I realized what it was, I am not going to waste half an hour of my time watching it. I mean, I know niggers are violent beasts. I don't have to be reminded. This video would not tell me anything I don't already know, and I really don't have the time anymore to waste going over things that I already know. So for that reason, I didn't actually watch it, but apparently there's something about it that just has caught the imagination of the white world, and it's had something like 75 million hits, and everyone's now moaning and groaning about the evil, wicked Joseph Kony, and why doesn't the United Nations go in and arrest him, and why doesn't the Americans go in and arrest him, why doesn't Obama send the Navy SEALs, and blah, 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 It's one of these weird sort of outpourings of liberal guilt and whatnot over the poor plight of the wretched Africans, which of course they brought on themselves because they're niggers and they can't run their own affairs. And if they didn't want to end up starving and being murdered by their own people and living like animals, then they shouldn't have run the white man out in the 1960s. But that's a little bit too commonsensical for most people, so we don't speak about that anyway. As near as I can tell, there's nothing special about the video. I suppose if there was any reason, I could actually sit down and watch it, but so far as I know, it's just a typical liberal wham, wham, wham piece. One interesting thing that did happen is about 4 or 5 days ago, the 20-something white guy who made this video, I think he lives in Los Angeles someplace, he stripped himself naked, and he was running around naked in public, performing self-erotic acts, shall we say, right on a public street corner. And he got video cammed, of course, doing this. I did see that, him running up and down the street yelling and hollering buck naked. And so the cops came and took him away to a psychiatric ward. And so now he's sitting in a rubber room babbling to himself and probably playing with himself. And they said they're not going to press any charges because he's now a liberal icon because he made this YouTube about this horrible black dictator. And so he's getting the kid gloves treatment. I'm sure if your average wino did that, they'd probably just throw him in the drunk tank downtown. But that's really all I know about that YouTube video and Joseph Kony. And what you seem to be asking about, Richard, is the reaction of these 75 million white idiots who watched the video. Well, what can I tell you? They're idiots. You're right, we're living in a completely artificial Facebook, YouTube world where we spend most of our time sitting behind our computer terminals, staring at a screen, and we're just completely, totally losing touch with the real world. Maybe when that guy took off his clothes and ran up and down the street whacking off in public, he was making some kind of attempt to reconnect with the real world. Who knows? Yes, the whole Facebook YouTube phenomenon is in some ways very sinister. Unfortunately, we have to use both Facebook and YouTube because whether we like it or not, that's where the people we need to reach as white nationalists hang out. I really wish there was some way that we could deep six the whole internet. I will tell you guys a little secret. I have in the past toyed with the idea of simply dropping the whole internet, going right back to printed publications only, and basically disconnecting my computer and refusing to live like that anymore and sort of taking myself back in a time machine to about 1987 or so. It's a tempting thought sometimes, but the internet is like gunpowder or nuclear weapons. It can't be uninvented. Whether we like it or not, it's a fact of life, and it is the only mass electronic medium that we have access to, and we have to use it. I wish it wasn't so, but then if wishes were horses, then beggars would ride. Okay, now, a few quick housekeeping comments before we roll on. Now, last week, I put up on the northwestfront.org site a 17-minute special podcast on immigration to the United States for foreign white people, especially British. What that was a clip from the July 1st, 2010 Radio Free Northwest in which I discussed the topic of immigration for Brits, and I've gotten so many requests down through the months since then, and I would refer them to that July 1st, 2010 podcast, but that particular section on immigration was about halfway through the podcast, and so what I decided I'd do, I decided I'd just clip the whole thing and I'd put it up separately. So if you have any questions about immigration, contact me and I will send you the link to where you can hear this 17-minute piece that I did on immigration. Basically, it's hard, but it can be done. The United States does not want white immigration, and you have to really jump through a lot of hoops to do so, but it can be done, and in this podcast, I tell you what some of those hoops are and how to get around them. Second housekeeping comment. I need to hear from anybody out there in the Spokane, Washington area who is interested in getting a Northwest Front unit set up in their locality. There are reasons for this right now, which I won't get into, but if you're interested and you live out there in Eastern Washington, give me a shout. It's about time we got some action going on out there. Being an author, I'm supposed to be against plagiarism, but I'm not nearly as down on it as you might think. I myself have been plagiarized before, apparently on one occasion by none other than Quentin Tarantino, although I wouldn't know, I've never bothered to watch the movie in question. I just got a lot of emails telling me I should sue Tarantino. Personally, I've always viewed plagiarism as the sincerest form of flattery. And I admit right up front that I have no hesitation at all in stealing all their good stuff from the Jews and the Reds and using it or adapting it to our own cause, like that Jefferson Airplane song Volunteers I've used on several occasions before this in various contexts. I don't know how many of you have ever seen the movie Gone with the Wind, but I remember hearing my mother and my grandparents talk about the day it came to Greensboro in 1939 and how there were lines 3 blocks long in front of the theater on opening night because at long last someone was going to tell the story of the South from our side. I understand that in the early 1990s there was a little bit of the same phenomenon in Ireland with the movie Michael Collins when that came out. And the schools let their students out for a day so that they could go on field trips to the theater and see the flick. I've often wondered what my own children thought of it. Now, I know most of you probably won't believe this, but one day, far in the future, someone is going to make a movie about us, about the Northwest War of Independence, when we finally change our thinking and recover our ancient courage sufficiently actually to fight that war. It won't be Steven Spielberg or any other Jew, because by then the NVA, or whatever its real-world equivalent turns out to be, will have gone down to Hollywood and gunned down all the Jew producers and directors. So at least our movie maker will be some kind of half-assed Gentile. I envision a big, full-blown documentary to start off with. Some kind of dramatic title like The Trouble or something of the kind, telling the story of our struggle for freedom here in the Northwest. Now, that movie is going to need a theme song, and so I stole one for it. Some of you may recognize it, and yeah, I nicked this one from a World War II Jew propaganda movie. But it's a good, powerful theme song. Way too good for us to let the kikes keep it. So from now on, it's ours, at least in our own mind, until the time comes. Imagine sitting in a movie theater, like my grandparents, waiting for Gone with the Wind to finally tell their story. Only in your case, it'll be the story of our war for independence against the tyrant on the Potomac. The lights go down in the theater, the movie starts, and this theme builds up. You can use your own imaginations from this point on.
Thank you. Hi guys, this is Axis Sally, and it's amazing the things you can find when looking for other things. I happened to stumble across a forum for legal advice and was just reading through some of the topics, and I found this response to a question about car insurance. Black people cannot help themselves. They like to steal bikes. They also love to sell drugs. Why are their lips so humongous? It looks like bees sting them on their lips all the time. I just want to beat blacks in the head with a baseball bat every time I see them. Go back to Africa. We don't want you here. You are a bunch of criminals. I also don't support the NAACP or Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson because they are racist unlike me. I am not a racist, just a white person who is fed up with the blacks and their ways of law-breaking. Send them back to Africa. They also lie when they say they are African-American because they were born here, not in Africa. Send those liars back to the homeland. Let them chase elephants, lions, giraffes, and other African animals with spears. They would enjoy living in huts because that would be a bigger house than their current one. Bear in mind, this in no way fit in with the discussion. This was just a kid blowing off steam. And, of course, he is absolutely correct, though I wonder about his choice of space to vent. Niggers do lie when they say they are African American. They do steal bikes and sell drugs, and probably steal drugs, too. They are a bunch of criminals. And while I don't necessarily want to beat them all with a baseball bat, I do agree that they, like all races, need a homeland that is just theirs. And so do white people. Only the niggers have their homeland and the whites don't, which is why I do what I do. Anyway, when looking for other white people who also want a homeland, resist the urge to make bosom buddies out of anyone who tells a racist joke, says the word nigger, or posts in a legal advice forum about chasing African animals with spears. It's easy to be a racist when you won't get caught. It's easy to tell racist jokes in a bar and just pass it off as drunken idiocy. Someone was asking me if I thought people were starting to wake up in light of the Obama depression and the waves of illegal Mexicans. I think it's also easy to have a racist thought when anything of yours is threatened, like when a nigger mugs you or you lose your job to an illegal alien. I think a person who is truly racially aware will be aware even in times when it is not convenient to be so. Are you still a racist when a nice black family moves into your neighborhood? It's not a horrible crime against humanity to say that some individual blacks aren't really that bad. I have had several black coworkers who were hardworking and good at their jobs and not totally bad people to be around at work. But that doesn't mean they have any right to be in a land that was meant for white people. It means that when it came to dealing with a situation that should not exist, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. The niggers who are not stealing your bikes still belong in Africa chasing animals with spears. Are you still a racist when it costs you many things in your life? When you're no longer welcome at your mom's house for Thanksgiving? When your wife tells you it's her or the movement? If Obama blew up and all the niggers immediately rode their stolen bikes back to Africa and got stomped by elephants and all the Mexicans went back to Mexico and we put an electric fence on the border and we never saw another one ever again, would you still be a racist? Would you still believe that there are fundamental differences between the races and that these differences need to be preserved? That the different races of people were never meant to share the same space? Being a racist, or being racially aware, is about more than telling nigger jokes and wanting to get rid of all the Mexicans. It's possible to be racially aware and never tell racist jokes or listen to skinhead music. There are already too many young white people who like to say nigger and beaner, but who also like to dress like them and associate with them. When looking for comrades of quality, look beyond the simple ability to offend people with their speech. Actually, when it comes to looking for comrades, I believe more in not looking. Let them find you. Like I first read in The Brigade, you don't join the party joins you. Stop telling me about some guy you know who said something racist and how you think he's going to be the one to chase the kikes out of our country with spears. I'm not interested in those who have to be drawn out and convinced. I want those who come to us with their figurative guns ready. And here's one of my favorite racist jokes. Why are chimps always frowning? Because they know that in a million years they'll turn into niggers. Seriously, go back to Africa. We don't want you here. You are a bunch of criminals. And white people, we don't want you in Los Angeles and Chicago and Detroit. Come to the Pacific Northwest and help me chase these animals with figurative spears.
We
Okay, right now we've got Wallace, myself, Action Andy, and Lord Lucan here. We were sitting around and just BSing. I saw no reason why we shouldn't actually get this on the mic. Okay, so what were we talking about?
You're going off about the liberals.
Action Andy, you were saying about the liberals, how they see themselves as being lesser individuals. They know they're pathetic, as you put it, and they try to bring everyone down to their level. That was one of the points that you made.
Right. I'm actually cribbing what I'm talking about from White Apocalypse. I just read it this last weekend. It was a great book.
Kyle Bristow book?
Kyle Bristow, right. White Apocalypse. But in there, one of the protagonists considers himself an ubermensch. And as he's mentoring the other white guys, the other protagonists, he's talking about how liberals are pathetic human beings. And because of their patheticness, their misery, they seek for other people to be miserable and pathetic like themselves.
Well, one of you were mentioning something about Bob Whitaker said about white supremacy being a fact, or...
Yeah, that was one of the points he made, and I think it was a very good one. He said, white supremacy is not an ideology, it's a fact of life. And I think that is a really good point, because if you look around, all of these affirmative action quotas, all of these civil rights movements, all this boo-hooing, all this whining and crying about the striving for equality, it's really an admission that white supremacy is a fact, and not an ideology. Now, white nationalism is an ideology. It's a desire for a white nation, for self-preservation. But white supremacy is a little bit different. It's not really an ideology. It's a fact that none of the other races can stand. We build, we create, we do things, we propagate a lot of good things. We're builders, we're creators as a people, always have been, always will be, hopefully. And so, what that does is it makes many other people envious. And so what they do is they want to take what we have, what white people have. And so by doing this, by pursuing this, it's actually one of the biggest admissions of white supremacy as a fact. And that's why all these liberals are so adamant about forcing their way on other people. And they'll use all methodologies like physical force, you know, moral blackmail, manipulation to enforce that because they know it's a fact. And like most facts that they don't like, they just ignore it or try to downplay its existence and convince others of the same.
If white people aren't better than other people, why is it that all these other races have to be brought up to our standards through basically cheating, through, in essence, spotting them points, you might say?
Well, that's why white people, when you try to explain white genocide to them, their eyes start glazing over. They can't think of it. They can't conceptualize it because...
Glazing over, actually.
Yeah, glazing over. They don't get it because white people know that white people are the ones that made aeroplanes. Well, everybody knows that white people made aeroplanes and cars and rocket ships. I mean, man, we made a ship to fly through outer space and we had people land on a foreign body in outer space. Who's done that? Nobody's done that but old Blue Eye.
Well, I was thinking of the liberal claims to represent evolution, which in fact is a lie, because the philosophy of liberalism doesn't agree with it at all. But he uses that trying to say, oh, he's a smart person, he's an intelligent person because he's evolutionist, because if you take the Mensa people, like the 160 IQs, they're all evolutionists. There's no evolutionists. You have dumbass evolutionists who think that, because there's no such thing as real law, we can go and break the law. So all these dumbass evolutionists are watching cartoons in the prison system.
Well, you can't break the laws of nature.
They just ignore them and pretend they don't exist. Mm. They believe they're above them.
So therefore it tries different ways. Mm. And then it decides on which is the best way and chooses that method. Mm. I mean...
We were gabbing away here. We were talking about this liberal idea that we are all eventually going to be one big coffee-colored mass. I think you were...
Yeah, and that's very common. And this is actually accepted by a lot of people as just a fact and an inevitability of what's going to happen. They just say, well, you know, we have all these people in here. We have this lovely little mosaic and... Sooner or later, it's just going to be all one race with this one language, and when they say it as if it's just a plain fact. They say, well, there's a lot of people out there that are still resistant to that, and they don't really say this part, but the underlying implication within that is that, oh, don't worry, all these other people will either die off or be destroyed or pushed so far to the fringe so they won't even be able to make an influence, and I hate to say it, but as things stand right now, that has enough resonance to it to kind of be a little chilling when you think about it, and that's why we need to try and change that and reverse it and to prove these individuals wrong once and for all.
Well, A few weeks ago, I did my second Mike Harris show for the Republic Broadcasting Network, and Mike mentioned, since he lives in Arizona, he mentioned that he took his kid to like a PTA meeting, and they were having a little assembly there, and all the kids were up on stage and, you know, singing songs, whatever they were doing, and he was sitting next to some Mexican woman, and they got into a, you know, more or less friendly chat, and she said, "Which child is yours?" And Mike pointed out his son, and she said something just quite innocently, something like, "Oh, what a beautiful blonde. You know, in 100 years, they're not going to be any more blonde people left." And she wasn't apparently even being racist or mean or anything like that. She was just stating what, to her, was a completely obvious fact. And you will be appalled when you realize how many white people these days quietly accept in their own minds the fact that our own race is going to become extinct, and 100 years from now, we're all going to be baby shit brown. This is just something that has pervaded the white man's thought, and I think it's one of the reasons why we don't fight. I saw this in South Africa and Rhodesia. Slowly but surely, this defeatist attitude got through. You'd be sitting there in the pub, and some old yuppie would be sitting there with his lion lager moaning and groaning into his beer. "Ah, it's inevitable. Majority rule has got to come. Black rule is coming. We're somehow going to have to adjust. Oi." Well, not oi, but you get the impression. I mean, a lapse from my Afrikaner into a Jew there, but you get the impression the whites in South Africa and Rhodesia were defeated in their minds long before they were defeated politically, and they were never defeated on the battlefield. But that's how wars are won. They're won in the mind, and I'm afraid that the white man has already lost this one in his mind. That's what we're going to have to work on.
We must have the will to power, the will to action. Everything is will. I think the first author to put it down in ink was Arthur Schopenhauer, and then Nietzsche picked it up in Also Sprach Zarathustra, Der Übermensch, and then it got absorbed by Thuleism and then NSDAP and the Third Reich. But it's something that needs to be revived in us, is the will to power. Once we lose our will, then we might as well just be some weak animal and roll over and die in the snow in the mountains.
Now, so dealing with this will business, let's think about some of the ideas in Christianity, is that we have to wait on the top of the mountain for God to wave his magic wand and then send the Son of God back down to us, and where everything's going to be nice and the kingdom of God is going to arrive all by magic. We have to get rid of this idea that somehow magic should have anything to do with our life at all, or that we should rely on other people to somehow save us. This whole idea that somehow white survival is dependent on the government or is dependent on supernatural powers has got to end.
You know, normally I don't believe in getting into religion on this show, but when you're talking about things like the rapture and about how we got to wait for Jesus to come back and he's just going to solve everything and we have no need to fight in this world because Jesus is going to split the sky open and come back and that sort of stuff, I have no hesitation at all in attacking and denouncing and refuting that particular Christian viewpoint, because that is not a religious viewpoint. That is a political, racial ideology connected with Zionism. You have to bear in mind that a lot of the theology, so-called, of Christian churches and Christian denominations today are not really Christian as such. They're either Judeo-Christian or they are Zionist Christian, or Christian Zionists, as they're actually called. Many of these Pat Robertson types refer to themselves as Christian Zionists. That is not a religion. That's a political ideology. And as far as I'm concerned, whether they use the name of Jesus or not, it's open season on that, because that has to do not with God, not with religion. That has to do with race. The survival of our race. I define a Zionist as any belief or person or ideology that believes that the Jews are God's chosen people, or that they have some kind of special relationship with God, or they have some kind of moral authority that the rest of us lack. That is not a religion, that is a political ideology. And as such, it's not only something that we have to fight, but it would be specifically banned in the Northwest Republic. There is a provision in the Northwest Constitution that you cannot use religion as a disguise for political activity, which has been the cause of so many of the problems that we've had in the past century. That's one of the reasons why we forbid a professional clergy.
Well, enough of Christianity. If somebody wouldn't mind talking about Odinism or Votinism and tell us what voting wills.
Well, I suppose I can kind of qualify for that one. When you think of a heathen ideology, it's surrounded by specific virtues that have been with our people for a very long time. The reason we use Odin or Votan, if you prefer, is that it's deity indigenous to white people. in this case specifically Germanic white people, but there's also cognates in all Aryan religions of Votan, and as pantheon, what it surrounds is living with honor and honesty, persistence for the truth with courage, industriousness and loyalty, perseverance and self-determination. And when you accept all of these things and you try to pursue them, you'll make yourself a better individual. You'll make yourself a more productive individual and a stronger individual. Notice how these virtues do not necessarily coincide with materialism, which the materialism of modern America coincides with the Judaic element and influence, which is different. It's foreign. It's from a foreign people and it's from a foreign place. So, to be honest with you, one bit of advice I would give to all racially minded people who just simply want to pursue what is right, maybe don't ask of other white people what do they believe in, whether it's Christianity or heathenry or creationism or whatever. Ask, do they believe in something? Do they have some type of set of values in which they have the expectation of themselves and others to rise above this materialism, this egocentrism, the selfishness? Because if so, that's what you really need to worry about rather than their theological details. I think that's a personal thing unique to all individuals, but I think as white people, we really should think of the better picture rather than our own self-benefit and materialistic gains.
Well, the two major manifestations of Judaic values or culture or Judaism, whatever you want to call it, in Western society over the past couple hundred years have been capitalism and communism. I know I've said this before, but I'll go over it again. Both capitalism and communism are completely materialistic worldviews. They view man as not a spiritual being, not as a being with a soul, not as a being with hopes and aspirations, but as an economic unit of production and consumption. The only real question or only real difference between the two being who eventually reaps the profit of these units of production and consumption. Under capitalism, it's private corporations, and today that's represented by the Republican Party in the United States. And under communism or socialism, Marxist socialism, I should say, it represents the state, which is the position of the Democratic Party today. So in essence, our politics today, insofar as we have any real politics at the upper level of society, is a continuation of this conflict between communism and capitalism that's been going on for the past 100 years. But again, both communism and capitalism are different sides of the same coin, and that is complete total Judaic materialism of man without a soul, man as only a material being with material needs, man without any spiritual element whatsoever. California high school teacher to be fired for calling student Jew boy. Gabrielle Leko. That almost sounds African. Leko, a high school math teacher from La Canada, north of Los Angeles, also ridiculed a special education student's speech impediment. La Canada school board voted unanimously to terminate her employment effective February 27th. An initial complaint against Leko was filed last June by then school board member Cindy Wilcox. Okay, now, this is in more or less the Los Angeles area. That guy that I mentioned just now, the one that was actually tying up his students over a period of some years, he would basically have his students stay after school. He would tie them into chairs, torture them in various ways, force them to eat various secretions from his body, which I won't get into because it really is, I mean, really sickening. I'm sorry to say this was a white degenerate who was doing this. Finally got caught because, like most of these pervs, he just couldn't resist taking photographs while he was doing it. There's a big uproar going on down in Los Angeles about this. He has successfully sued the state from jail to prevent his termination and to keep his pension benefits, and he won. So he's going to be sitting in prison for a while, but he's still going to be drawing his full teacher's pension while he's sitting in jail for abusing his students in a really sickening manner. But this person, whoever she is, gets fired for...
I mean, how the hell does that even happen? Somebody who does that and they actually get it? I mean, what the hell?
What I'm curious to know is what was with this woman thinking that she could call a student a Jew boy, whether he was or not, and not get canned? I don't know. I guess we just don't learn. Or it could also be one of those cases where somebody was just so fed up with this kike's behavior because Jews are obnoxious.
Yeah.
You can always tell when you're in the presence of a genuine Jew because you have this urge to strangle them with your bare hands. There's something about Jews that just rubs everybody the wrong way. It's like a cat that comes in and rubs all over your leg and then claws your leg, then pisses on your leg and this sort of stuff. It's just, it's like they go out of their way to irritate people. And it could be that this teacher just lost her temper and just finally had enough.
We don't know because the article isn't even really long and doesn't even give much details, so...
Yeah.
No, that 37-page ordinance about throwing footballs is a lot longer.
Yeah, right. Okay. Some blacks insist, I'm not African-American. Well, they're not. Sometimes when some nigger says, I'm African-American, I'm tempted to ask him, okay, really, what part of Africa are you from?
Yeah.
Indians calling themselves Native American. I'm a Native American. I was born here in America. So are all of us.
Yeah, really.
I still slip up there all the time. I accidentally say Native American, then I get embarrassed.
I mean, that's a weird one. I always like American Indian, because if you just say Indian, it could understandably get confused with someone from India. So in that regard, it is a little bit of a geographical misnomer. But I don't like to be politically correct either.
Just call them Redskins.
Or that, yeah.
A white man take land from Indian. Give to nigger. Heap stupid. The labels used to describe Americans of African descent mark the movement of people from the slave house to the White House. Today, many are resisting this progression by holding on to a name from the past, black. For this group, some descended from U.S. slaves, some immigrants with a separate history. African American is not the sign of progress, hailed when the term was popularized in the late 1980s. Popularized by who? Popularized by the damn media. Have you ever actually listened to blacks talk about themselves? They don't refer to themselves as African Americans. They call themselves niggas.
Yeah.
Hey, my nigga, how's it going?
Yeah.
What you doing, nigga? Give me that bottle of wine, nigga. The debate has waxed and waned since blah, 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 blah. What are you? Where are you from? And how do you fit into this country? Well, you are a nigger. You are from some cotton patch or project somewhere. You do not fit into this country. You need to die. Well, I mean, they ask these questions. They want honest answers. We've got to have a dialogue about race here. This conversation about race. We hate you. You're useless. You smell. You got nappy head, nigga. See, this is one of the few places on the internet or anywhere else where you can find an honest dialogue about race.
I mean, it's true, though. Yeah. You can't even mention it in other things. Like, it's something that they don't even want discussed or talked about at all. So, I mean, screw them.
What else other than some little show like this or Joe Adams's, you know, Save White People or whatever, where else are you going to find white people who dare to say what all of us really think? All right, let's see what else we got here. Okay, this one says, teacher accused of spraying Febreze on student who smelled like fish. A Newfoundland teacher was accused of spraying down her student because he smelled fishy. Well, in Newfoundland, he would. This time, the teacher got a timeout. Well, at least didn't call him Jew Boy. Okay. Unless he was calling him Jew Boy while he was spraying him down with Febreze. Anyway, an elementary school teacher in Newfoundland, Canada, has reportedly been put on paid leave as district officials investigate a claim that she sprayed a student with an odor eliminator to mask his fishy-smelling lunch. Patty Rideout told CBS News she was very hurt and very angry after learning the teacher of her 10-year-old son, Christian Roberts, put him in the hallway and then sprayed him with Febreze last week. Other kids at Twillingate Island Elementary School had teased him over the fried capelin meal she'd made him. I guess capelin must be some kind of Canadian fish. I'll tell you, this guy's one of those islands off the Canadian Maritimes. Everything's going to smell like fish because that's the only industry on those islands. I feel like he's been embarrassed, bullied, and I think... bullying. Here we go, Sally. Yeah. And I think what she did was very disgraceful, Rideout told CBC News. I think my son was treated not like a human being. I think he was treated like a dog or a cat. Sounds to me like he was treated like a fish. I'm very hurt and very angry over this. Rideout told CBC when she first called her son's teacher for an apology, she hung up. Okay. After taking her concerns to the school board, Rideout received a written apology from the school's principal and vice principal, St. John's newspaper. The teachers offered to make an apology to your son in front of the class. His name was Christian. Okay. Christian, I'm sorry you smell like fish. I'm sorry I sprayed you with Febreze. But the fact is, you stank. You still do. You make me want to vomit, son. Matter of fact, come over here. I'm going to spray you down a little bit.
Come over here, Jew Boy.
Yeah, right, yeah. Bring your mom, which I'll give her a spray.
And take off that damn dress, you fag.
Okay. Researchers developing smartphone tech that detects depression.
Phone, there's an app for that?
Apparently. You've got a phone that will detect if you're depressed, and then what happens? Do they call the local psychiatric?
They probably call CPS and say that you're too depressed to care for your own kids.
Yeah, right. Either that or it's like an automatic alarm goes off in the cackle box, kind of like the old firehouse, and the men in the white coats slide down the pole and they jump in their ambulance and come after you with a butterfly net. Got a 5-alarm depression here. Okay, researchers at Northwestern University are developing a smartphone that can sense whether you're falling victim to depression. As WBBM News Radio's Regine Schlesinger reports, psychologist David Moore has been adapting phones as a virtual therapist for patients prone to depression. Okay, so you don't need a psychiatrist anymore. You've got an app on your phone in case you start going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. We're trying to develop individual algorithms for each user that can determine specific states. So their location, where they are, their activity, their social context, who they're with, what they're engaged in, and their mood. So, in other words, this phone is going to spy on everything you're doing, where you are, what you're eating, who you're talking with, what you're doing, and it's going to determine if you're depressed. So why would you want a phone that gathers and records all that information anyway? It'd be very handy for the secret police.
Well, you mentioned The Onion before. There was actually a comical video, but it was still very telling. The scenario was the CIA is on a talk show saying how convenient Facebook is because it does their job for them. And it was a fairly entertaining piece watching it, but like you said, many a true word said in jest, it was a little disturbing at the same time as well.
Well, the government, I know people think I'm making this up or they don't care. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to shoot that asshole who's gunning his car out there. But anyway,
he's depressed.
Yeah, I mean, he's depressed. That's how you can tell he's depressed. He doesn't need a phone to tell him he's depressed, that or he's drunk. But the government is involved in creating something they call persona management software, which enables someone to run up to 16 IDs on Facebook or other, quote, other social networking networks, which I guess means MySpace and maybe a few others, Twitter, Tweet, whatever. And they show different IP addresses. So it looks for all the world like you've got 16 separate individuals, and each government computer operative has one or two of these packages of 16 IDs, and they follow various stories. They, in essence, manipulate public opinion through this persona management software by pretending to be many, many different people and pretending to have a consensus about certain issues and have opinions and make comments, etc. In other words, they're using this to guide public opinion in the direction that the government wants it to go. They make no secret of that. So to get back to our original topic of discussion about an hour ago, this gets into healthcare, Obamacare. If a few years from now, if there's a technology that allows an app to be put on your phone that will say, well, you're depressed or your blood sugar's low or you're having a heart arrhythmia or, you know, you've got cancer or something like that, and your phone could then send a signal to a police station or hospital, and the guys in the white coats could show up on your door saying, come with us. We have an electronic signal here saying you're depressed or you're sick. and you don't have any choice. Your phone says you're sick. The computer says you're sick. Therefore, you're going to come with us and get pumped full of drugs.
So I'm not going to download that one.
Yeah. See, all of this stuff, it's right now, of course, it's voluntary, but will it be voluntary 10 years from now, 20 years from now? And I don't think people realize what's going to happen in 2014 when Obamacare kicks in. You will be required by law to buy this Obamacare, this health care. If you do not buy it, they probably won't put you in jail immediately, but what they will do is they will fine you. The fine, of course, will be equivalent to whatever you were supposed to pay for Obamacare. And if you don't pay, if you say, hey, screw you, they will find ways to take it from you. They will, for example, increase your withholding deductions at work. They will take your tax refund. They're going to get that money out of you one way or the other. And if you do manage to find some way not to pay it, you're going to be a criminal. They will come and they will eventually arrest you and drag you to prison for, I think the official charge would probably be contempt of court, but might be an IRS, might be a tax charge, because technically speaking, Obamacare is a tax since you're required to pay it. So I don't think people really get what's going to happen in 2014 if we don't get somebody in there in 2012 who's ready to, I mean, I normally don't push for Republican candidates or a Republican Congress or anything like that, but I have to say that we better hope that we do get some kind of Republican administration in there in 2012 and that they do have the balls to actually repeal this whole Obamacare thing, because when Obamacare comes in, we are going to be looking at a tyranny in this country like we've never experienced before. You know, it strikes me that we haven't had any Scandinavian black metal on here for a while. This is Amon Amarth.
We'll be right back.
Sally just made an interesting suggestion. Now, we were talking about how it used to be that back in Pastor Butler's day, there were more ATF agents in the Spokane office than there were in New York City, and the same was pretty much true of the FBI office in Spokane. But now that Pastor Butler and the Hayden Lake compound are gone, there's no big evil terrorist threat up there for our illustrious secret police to watch, and the BATFE and the FBI offices in Spokane are losing their budget and their staff to really manky parts of the country with a lot of Arabs and Muslims, like Detroit and the sleazier parts of Los Angeles and Atlanta and New Jersey and so forth and so on. I mean, Jesus, I can almost sympathize with some FBI agent who's got a home and a family with good schools and roots in the community in a nice majority white town like Spokane, and then you get transferred to some hellhole like Newark, New Jersey, or Detroit. Especially if you have kids, that would scare me shitless. I can understand why you guys working out of Spokane get so desperate to justify your budget and your staffing levels that you make up things like the Edgar Steele tapes or the Bionic Backpack. I mean, let's face it, anti-terrorism has become a major industry in this country, burning billions of dollars of federal budget every year, and without us nasty, wicked terrorists, there can't be anti-terrorists, and there can't be those huge anti-terrorism budgets. Now, can there be? In a weird kind of way, you need us. Otherwise, you might have to go after drug dealers or the mob or bikers. You know, real criminals who are hard to catch and who might actually shoot back at you. And we can't have that now, can we? So, tell you what, and this is almost a semi-serious proposition because in an offbeat way it would actually make sense and be of mutual benefit. Here's an idea I'd like to run by all you federal agents and U.S. attorneys from the Spokane area who are out there in your cubicles, hunched over your computers with your ears cocked, listening for me to slip up. How's this for an arrangement? We understand that at one stage you were paying Brian Holland $8,000 per month for virtually nothing. And you paid that slut you used to entrap the Mahon brothers, what, 40 grand, something like that? Now, that's not a very efficient use of funds. What did you get out of that? Two broken-down old men in the Mahon case, and so far as anyone knows, nothing out of Brian Holland. Now, I don't know what you paid Willard to do his John Doe number 2 thing back in Oklahoma City days, but you can't have been very happy with the result there. So instead of waiting for the fruit to fall off the tree, so to speak, why not just plant the whole orchard? With this idea, you'll have to spring for a couple of hundred grand, true, but it will repay itself many times over down through the years in budget for the Spokane FBI, BATFE, and maybe DHS offices as well, not to mention all the local cop shops. Why doesn't the FBI set up the Northwest Front in our own headquarters compound, about 40 acres of cheap land somewhere outside Spokane or across the state line in the Idaho Panhandle? Hayden Lake or Sandpoint or Coeur d'Alene, someplace like that that's still in your bailiwick, I believe, like Pastor Butler used to be. Come on, guys, you know you've gone for deals like this before, in the not-so-distant past, in fact. We'd need at least a few trailers on the land, septic tank, power hookup, running water, so forth and so on. And so, yeah, it would cost the Bureau a pretty penny in startup capital. But it would also reprioritize the Spokane FBI and BATFE offices, and stop all this nonsense of slashing your budget and sending all your guys to Detroit or New Jersey or El Cajon, California, huh? Just think about all the time and money you can spend wiretapping us and setting up parabolic mics in the woods and following us around all day and sending in informers and writing up reports and intercepting our mail and email. The possibilities for burning budget are endless. And I can promise you guys this. This Northwest idea is really going to take off one day, and when it does, we'll generate so much work for you that Washington will have to give you all the money and manpower you want. So they, in turn, can show the Democrats what a tight rein they're keeping us wicked racists on, eh? Come on, guys, think about it. It will be a win-win situation for both of us. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98104. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.